Hey everyone, before we get started, we have another giveaway to announce for you guys. If you head on over to all of our social media at ButWhyThoughPC, you can enter now for a chance to win one of five copies for Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, all on the PS4. So take this opportunity to drop back in with the most iconic skateboarding games ever made. When you play Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, you get one epic collection that was rebuilt from the ground up in incredible HD. This game has all the pro skaters, levels, and tricks that you know and love, but fully remastered and with even more content than the originals. With Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2, you can break skateboarding boundaries, show off your own style, and be a part of the next generation of skaters and creators. Additionally, you can play all the original game modes and go head-to-head with two-player local matches. You can also show off your style and creativity with the upgraded Create a Park and Create a Skater features. And you can compete against players from around the world in multiplayer modes and leaderboards. So head on over to @ButWhyThoughPC on Twitter and enter now. It's our pinned tweet. Click the link, get in and enter. Again, we're going to be giving away five PS4 copies of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2. The winner will be announced this Friday, August 12th. So now enjoy this episode. Everybody, welcome back to But Why the Podcast, and today we are talking about probably one of my favorite sports games in existence. No, my favorite sports game in existence, Tony Hawk Pro Skater. As always, I'm Kate, I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And our spooky boy who's not covering something spooky, Alex.
If I need to be spooky, I can talk about the Neversoft guy that you could unlock to play as, or the skeleton.
Yes. This is fair.
I can keep my brand here a little bit.
But as much as it's my favorite sports game, it's also one of Matt's favorite games in general, and he's been hyped to do this episode, so he's going to be leading us.
Yes, I am, because this has been another Dreamcast was one episode, and Tony Hawk Pro Skater was the other episode that I've been excited to do for a long time, and we finally got here. So obviously we'll start with our intro question, and basically it'll be pretty simple of, did you play Tony Hawk Pro Skater? If so, how many of them? And then, I guess, what was your favorite one?
I can go first. I want to say I played the first one, but I'm just going to start at 2 because the first one's a little hazy for me. So I played from 2 to American Wasteland. American Wasteland was so bad that I just stopped paying attention to Tony Hawk games at that point. And I didn't realize that everything had come out after it. So those are the only ones that I've played with my concrete memory. My favorite one is Tony Hawk Underground, but for the campaign and the story and all of that. But mechanics wise, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 is my favorite. So I have it like split in that way. But I have to give a shout out to the warehouse free skate demo that came with the Pizza Hut stuff. Because that is also my favorite, because I played that game. So I played that demo so many times, I thought it was real.
God, like, talk about a throwback. Jesus. For me, I didn't own Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1, but I played it like at a friend's house, like on his 64. I did own Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. I played that one a bunch. Didn't play 3 or 4, but I did play Underground 1 for sure, and I think that one's my favorite, only because it's where I put the most time into, and I didn't really play them after that, because after that I was playing like Jet Set Radio, and I was like addicted to Jet Set Radio, so I stopped playing like skateboarding games to play the rollerblading game, but for me, Tony Hawk Underground was my favorite, just because, again, because of the campaign, and it's just the one that I played the most. But I really do love Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 because it got me into kind of like that genre a video game.
Cool. Alex, what do you got for us?
So I played one a lot, played two some. I've played through two, but I didn't play it a ton as a kid. I've played three the most. And I played Tony Hawk on Game Boy Color, which is about as rough as it sounds, but I had a good time with it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you might be the only person.
I mean, it was. I had only so many games on that console, so yeah, I made it last. But yeah, I really like all the ones that I played. I guess I at that point have maybe just played like quote classic Tony Hawk games. Three is probably my favorite because that's the only one that we owned. All the other ones we just rented and played as much as we could when we had them. But yeah, I think 3 just has like really big, fun levels. We could hit really insane combos, and the mechanics were really satisfying for that one. But I am just incredibly excited for tomorrow when I'll be able to pick up 1 and 2 the 1 and 2 remake.
Awesome. Which is obviously pretty much why we're doing this episode, because by the time this episode airs, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, the remastering, will have released and back out. I guess for me, as we're going to start... I played 1, 2, 3, the 2X, the 4, Underground. I played Underground 2, didn't like it. Wasteland was kind of like my falling out of, like, I'm just like, this is bad, but it's here. And then I kind of gave up because Downhill Jam sucked. And then I played Project 8 and Proving Ground, and they're both terrible. And then I just, there are other games after that, but that's about it. But the fun thing about this franchise, as much as I played it, I beat this thing on, like, 4 consoles. So I have beat it on PlayStation when it originally came out. Then, obviously, the N64. Also, I beat on the Dreamcast, which is where I played through here, if you listen to our Dreamcast episode when they released. And then, I actually, when the 2X came out, I beat on the Xbox as well. And I owned all of these games. So, basically, I owned Tony Hawk 1 and 2 on, basically, 3 consoles. And I played the PlayStation 1, actually, so much because of what my friends owned.
So I would like everybody to point. I would like to point out to everybody, if you haven't realized, by episode 152, right? Or 152?
Yeah. Yes.
Matt either doesn't like things, or just likes them very, very, very hard.
yeah.
I would just like to point that out.
I mean, and side note here, right? Like, we've covered a couple of video game sports video games like so far. Kate hasn't played any of them, but Kate played the hell out of this. So,
sir, I played the very last NCAA.
we don't talk about that one. But yeah.
So I think that also speaks to like how good this game is when, you know, it's a sports game and Kate's all into it. I'm down.
Yeah, so this is
there's a lot of love goes. A lot of love's going to go into this episode.
Sure. Like I said, this is obviously one of the franchises I've been waiting to play, and something I don't talk about a lot because, kind of like Sonic, it just kind of died and then went to complete garbage for the last like 10 years. And so it's been rough to be a Tony Hawk Pro Skater fan. So you just kind of, like Alex said, like the originals, which basically means the only games that actually count.
Sonic, Call of Duty, Halo, Pro Skater. Name a franchise that hasn't been run into the ground, please.
I tell you this much. Outside of maybe Sonic, this is by far the worst franchise that's been run into the ground, which we'll get into later.
Oh no, numbers.
Yeah, but as far as my favorite, it's by far Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. I love the second one. It's great. Obviously, even in the 2X, because it's like a combination of 1 and 2, which is basically the original 1 and 2 game. 3, great for the mechanics, which I know everybody loves, but I still just love 2 so much more. Just 2 brought so much well, and then I also, which we'll kind of get into with the mechanics, as much as they're nice, some of them what I added definitely took away from what I enjoyed, and not that they were bad. That just made me worse, which we'll talk about. So I guess we'll start off with basically some background. The franchise began in 1999. It officially released on September 29th of 1999, developed by Neversoft, which poor Neversoft closed down in 2014. They developed the game from basically 1999 to 2007, with the later years being Robomoto that took over for the later games that are all awful. I do want to say a fun fact about Neversoft. I didn't realize until listening to this or doing this episode, because I kind of knew, but much as I've talked about like Bethesda and all these other stuff like me growing up, Neversoft probably been the biggest part and influence of my entire childhood between this and Guitar Hero, of how much Guitar Hero I played. Because I still own like 4 guitars in like every Guitar Hero game ever made.
Again, when Matt loves things, he loves them hard. I say this as something that Matt loves. It's
I have over $500 between Guitar Hero and then eventually Rock Band. I have over $500 worth of DLC into those games.
He still plays them. He took it out like when quarantine first started and was playing so much on expert that he was sweating. It was a sight to behold.
The guitar's over there in the background for
Guitar
our
Hero is so good. I still have a PS2 for the sake of Guitar Hero.
That's why I have an Xbox 360
Worst gift I ever gave Matt was the new Guitar Hero because he played it for a little while and just talked about, man, but this isn't Guitar Hero. And I was like, okay.
So here's the thing. I actually really, this is off topic, but I kind of really enjoyed the new Guitar Hero, specifically the live TV function where it would just play music videos on a loop.
Yes.
Like that was such a good feature.
So I actually enjoy the game and I love the feature they have. The problem I have is I never got over the whole, we just want to make it difficult. So instead of going left to right, we're going to go up to down.
Oh, and yeah, then, the new controller I was not a fan of.
And then, obviously, I still like the color spectrum other than it's just black and white.
Black, white, up, down, yeah.
Yes.
Agreed. Yes. So, Tony Hawk.
Yes, so Tony Hawk. obviously, some of the, for the new game, it actually, since, as I mentioned, Neversoft has closed down. Basically, Vicarious Visions will be doing that, which they also did a lot of the ports over to their stuff. Also, other fun fact about Neversoft, that was actually the original gamer tag from my Xbox Live and my first character in WoW.
I am not surprised.
And then I had to listen.
Yo,
to
this episode is going deep, y'all. Like,
which,
course, this
again,
man named his
when
World
Matt
Warcraft
loves
character
things. When Matt Microsoft. Loves things, he loves them hard.
People talk about the Pixar little eye, but the O in Neversoft is still where it's at.
I'm not gonna lie. There's a statue in Dallas that is just a giant eye, and when I saw it, I was like, "Oh, Neversoft."
Yes, I love Neversoft. Rest in peace. So, synopsis for those of you that somehow do not know what a Tony Hawk Pro Skater game is. Basically, it's a franchise series of skateboarding games with kind of the originals, which we talk about, would basically be Tony Hawk Pro Skater before we get into like the actual names. Basically, more of a classic arcade game where you kind of achieve high scores or perform certain tasks. With the later entries, basically where Underground starts, where you get like more of a story-based mode. And eventually, in the later games... kind of this whole My Player thing where you kind of like start as a regular skater to make a career. And that's kind of like in a Project 8 Proving Grounds stuff.
It's an underground. Underground, you do that. They kidnap you and they put you in a van and then you start becoming a pro skater.
Well, yeah. I know, but that's not, I know what you're talking about, the story mode, but I'm talking about explicitly like into like an actual like.
They put me in a van, Matt.
Oh, I know they do.
And I became a pro.
I know. That's fine.
I graffitied all over the world.
I know. As far as the games, the funny thing is, like, talking to people, there's actually a total of 20 games. Basically, 19 have actually been published by Activision, so I'll probably only count that with another one that nobody cares about. And this is including the new one of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 coming out, with Neversoft doing all of them but 2, and the 2X1, which essentially is a port of the 1, and then Downhill Jam, and then Robo Moto doing the last 7 of them. So they actually break it down into the Neversoft era, and the Robo Moto error, which is always going to be great saying this whole entire
era.
Episode. Huh?
Era.
I don't care.
Or are you calling it an error because it was
I mean, it was
games.
An error at this point. So the length of these games, we have... I don't think people, at least in my opinion, looking at people when they talk about how great these games, I don't think they realize how critically acclaimed some of these games are, which we'll kind of go over now. Like, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 came out in 99. So for the Metacritic, this is also, I'll give the Metacritic score, but this is kind of like an average because we've talked about this before of this early 2000s and the mid-2000s of like games were made differently for each console. Mm-hmm. So each console got its own rating and they varied so much, as Alex mentioned, with this Game Boy Color, which actually is like, I still don't know how you played that, essentially.
I had that and Dave Mirra's BMX on Game Boy Color and played both of them extensively.
I somehow feel like Tony Hawk Pro Skater on Alexa would be easier than Tony Hawk on the Game Boy.
Probably. I want to say it was basically a platformer for street courses, and then there was like a half pipe mode.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so going into these games, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 debuted in 1999, has kind of like I said, an average Metacritic score of 93. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, 2000, with a Metacritic score of 97. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3, Metacritic of 93. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2X, which I said is kind of like the little hybrid thing, actually has a 2001 Metacritic score of 80. And then Pro Skater 4, 2002, Metacritic of 91. And then obviously we get to Underground in 2003 with a Metacritic of 88. And those are probably what we'll probably focus on for probably most of the episode once we get into the but why those. But we have to mention the rest of them because they do technically exist. We have Underground 2, 2004, Metacritic of 83. You'll start seeing a pattern here soon. American Wasteland in 05, Metacritic of 78. Downhill Jam, Metacritic of 68. Project 8, 2006.
I would like to do one thing for American Wasteland. So I'm remembering that I hated American Wasteland for a very petty reason. I couldn't actually play as a female character when I was trying to go through the campaign, and it made me very mad because I had just played Underground 1 and 2 where I got to do that. That's what it was. Okay, it was petty. Also, the mechanics were awful. But
the mechanics were terrible. The soundtrack's great, though. I still actually
the soundtrack is really good.
The Wasteland soundtrack. Project 8, 2006, Metacritic of 70. Proving Ground, 2007, Metacritic of 73. And those are the errors. So, I mean, even at the end of Neversoft, they're still pulling a 73, which is still not an awful game. It's still not a great game, especially when you start with like a 97 and 93 and stuff. And then we move to the Robo-Moto. It starts with Motion in 2008, has a Metacritic of 40. Shred in 2010, or excuse me, Ride in 2009, Metacritic of 46. Shred in 2010 has a Metacritic of 54. The funny thing about Shred is essentially this game sold so poorly that they thought this was actually going to be the end of the franchise. It sold like less than 3,000 copies.
Oh, wow. That's awful.
But they said, no, we need to put out more Tony Hawk. So then we get Pro Skater HD in 2012 as a 66, which is literally like the dumbed down version of the remake. They basically tried to HD it out, but it's just kind of terribly done. And then we get to the final straw that broke the camel's back of Pro Skater. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5 came out in 2015, has a Metacritic score of a 35.
Big rip.
This has been basically this game. Is the fourth and fifth lowest rated game of the PS4 and Xbox One era. So that's how bad they're rated. It was named the worst video game of the year by multiple outlets that year. And then I did want to read a quote from Entertainment Weekly. Basically said, this game is an insult to its history, to its licensed skaters and sponsors, to modern hardware, and to anyone who plays it.
So brutal. I looked up the animation.
It's terrible. Oh, no, it's terrible.
It's ugly. Mr. Hawk, if you're listening to this episode for whatever reason, because you're a very nice man, I'm sorry, but this is ugly.
Yeah, they don't know what happened in that game. And like I said, I've never personally played this game because I saw the trailer and knew this is terrible looking for being 2015. What happened? So.
Yeah. Oh, honey, no.
Yeah, I had to go through that. There's a lot of games. People forget about them. Like I said, I remember Ride coming out. I remember the HD one. It wasn't enough for me to get down, but like, they were so bad. So, does anybody have any stuff with the history and whatnot before we get into some of these, but why those?
I'm just sad right now, so. However you can bring us out of this.
Yes, yes. And that's the funny thing.
But also, I'm going to send you, I just made a line graph of all of the scores, and it bums me out.
Yeah, because we talked about before of, like, how much... Oh, my God. So we talk about how, you know, some of the franchises we mentioned before, how they go downhill, and you're like, well, what are you talking about? I'm like, no, everybody agreed they're terrible.
Numbers hurt sometimes. That's what this podcast has taught me.
And I know that Matt just, like, covered all of this, but can we include Alex's line graph of all the information?
Include it in the show notes
because this is dedication to how bad like that decline is from like the tippy top to absolutely. The only thing worse than this is, you know, Madden 2020.
So
like, I'm just very sad for Tony. He's just such a nice man. I want him to have a good video game.
Well, the good, from what I understand, is obviously not like he didn't help, but I don't know how much he actually helped on the Robo-Moto era of games, because it looks like they literally tried to change what the game, like, basically.
Well, in that case, they got what they deserved, and
they tried to redo.
One and two is good now.
This is also kind of not necessarily connect era, but they tried to make it super, because obviously Skate comes on, and they try to make it super realistic of, like, you need to lean with your controller, and you need to do this motion captioning, and it's just terrible. But anyways, so to get to the but why though, so we can all come back to a happier place of what this franchise is actually about and not whatever Jaws 4, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5 is.
Wait, are those the same thing? Because I'll play it.
They might as well.
If I can be a skateboarding shark.
They might as well be. For those of you that listened to our Jaws episode, Jaws 4 is probably the worst rated movie, I think, on IMDb of all time.
It is.
Yeah. As I always start all of my episodes of Lead, we have a successful franchise. Big surprise. It's weird because it's a franchise that was technically around for 15 plus years, but also it hasn't done anything for like the last 5-6 years. But obviously we're getting a remastered coming out, so... From its peak, though, it's definitely a very successful, even though it kind of got ran to the ground.
I will say, by the time this comes out, that game is already out, so we can talk about it in present tense.
Yes, that is true. And so far, those reviews are looking way bigger than the bottom half of that line chart. As far as sales, it sold over 30 million units. Obviously, this will grow as a new release. And this is actually really impressive to me for a few reasons. One, this is... despite even making a decent game, which I guess if you want to count Proving Ground since 2007, but really like 2004. So it almost hasn't made a good game in like 15 to 16 years. Basically, it put in context too of like the way games, because when I looked up these numbers, it's kind of like the way games sell now. Because we think, oh, 30 million units is still a lot, but it's not. Like in 2000, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 were the number 2 and number 3 top selling games that year. So not only the first one, but the second one. And then obviously the year before, you know, Tony Hawk, I think it was like the first one was like the third best selling. And they're like every year this will release for the first like 4 or 5 games, it's in the top 5 to 10,
yeah,
like top selling games.
Which like I do think is something to call out too. Like not even just like the fact that like the way games sell, but like when we look at sports games, like for whatever reason, you would think that like soccer, football, like things that people watch daily, you know, would have that higher participation from a fan base, but like skateboarding is more and like has more of that. I don't want to say more that's a lasting effect, but like when it comes out, it has more of an impact, I guess. And a consistent one when it was good, which I think is like when you think about sports games and stuff, like that is just really interesting to me because like X Games happen not that often, but I guess. I would say anybody can skateboard, but anybody can also play soccer, so.
Yeah, can I put it into context a little bit? Because I was just curious, like, what games came out in that year.
Yes.
2000, Pokemon Stadium is number one for the N64, and then Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, and then Pro Skater 1, and then Majora's Mask and Gran Turismo 2.
Yes.
Like, Gran Turismo 2 is fantastic. Shit. Majora's Mask is huge.
Oh, yeah.
And Tony Hawk outselled both of those with 2 games.
That is actually amazing.
Yeah. And the funny thing with the fun fact of this whole thing is only 6 games actually even sold over 1 million copies that year.
Yeah. And, like, to put that into some more context, Madden 2001, which is a pretty good Madden game,
yeah,
I would say.
Good. Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
You know, Tony Hawk's over doubles its sales that year.
Yep.
On PlayStation and, you know, almost all the consoles.
That's what's just really interesting to me. Like, I don't know why in my brain, like, I just think football would sell more. But, like, that's just...
My whole takeaway from this is, like, how much could people talk about the biggest selling copy? Like, look at how much Call of Duty sells on average per year right now.
Yeah.
And how much popular it is. And so it's just weird when you compare the copies of, like, you know, Call of Duty sold, like, 500 million copies on all of their games. And Tony Hawk's only sold 30. But it's kind of like, yeah, but Tony Hawk was doing this when you're, if you sold a million, apparently, you got, like, there's probably 1 million pre-orders right now for the new Call of Duty. It just wasn't as popular. It's just crazy of like how much it actually sold per se.
It's also like I think it gaming is probably a better look at the trend of like how we've, I don't want to say advanced, but like how much technology has come into the home and like how it's become like common, like everybody has a console.
Yeah.
And so like we're able to do these larger numbers, and I think that that's an even, I think game sales is one of those things when you watch its trajectory has more importance than watching like movie ticket sales, because I know a lot of people always use movie ticket sales, but like when you use like actual units and consoles per home, like that actually I think speaks to a change in culture larger than film and that kind of stuff.
Yeah
And it's doing it basically on just like at that time like one console kind of, right?
Yeah.
Like I mean, it on the Dreamcast it only sold 200,000 copies. But on the PlayStations, it's selling, you know, millions of copies on the PlayStation. Like, and that's just, you know, more. And NFL is on, like, everything right? Yeah. To kind of put that into some more context for how big like this is. And selling it, you sell out Majora's Mask, which is like arguably one of like the best Zelda games like there is, and it outsold that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yep, but couldn't beat Pokemon.
Hey, Pokemon Stadium is fantastic, my guy. That game's really good.
It's Pokemon, so.
It is Pokemon, yeah.
Yeah. Although I do wonder with this if like part of the success of the game was the moment that it existed in, not just in that skating was getting more popular, but I just looked it up and Tony Hawk landed the 900 literally 3 months before the game came out.
Yep.
Yeah. Like that close, and I didn't realize that it was in that close of proximity because, like, the 900 is his big move in the game. So in my head, I was like, "Oh, that must have been like early in development," but nope, like they put that in later. But like, I don't think I know anyone who was paying attention to skateboarding at the time who doesn't remember like seeing that for the first time. Like, there's very few videos that I can watch or things I can do where I feel like a child again. But like watching that video of Tony Hawk, I remember exactly where I was when I saw it the first time.
I remember they put on ESPN. I watched that thing live because they basically, when he went, they basically, all sports channels went straight in to watch this because they knew he was going to attempt it.
And that's exactly how I watched it. It was just like sitting in my living room just being like, he's going to do it like this. Yep. And like, I was barely into skateboarding, but I knew how monumental it was. And so to like watch that happen and then have a whole summer of trying to become a skateboarder and then to have that game drop, like it was just such a perfect storm for it to be as successful as it was.
Yeah. And I think too, like when we think about like, I guess I kind of solved it for myself listening to you talk, Alex, and then thinking back to like the fact I had a skateboard that like I made with my cousin's boyfriend. Like there is, my dad actually did like, we talked about dad like liking NCAA, whatever. Like, we're never going to go play in the NFL, and we're never going to go, you know, play for Real Madrid. But we can all pick up a skateboard and do the things that we were doing in the game.
Yes.
Like, in a more realistic way.
Anyways, but also, like, as much as we talk about, like, the good stuff coming and, like, these games being popular and selling a lot, obviously they're, what really obviously helps, too, is they're critically acclaimed. So, especially Tony Hawk Skater 1 through 4 into the Extent Underground. I knew they were highly rated, and I knew they were some of my favorite games. I didn't realize, I mean, I kind of knew, but I didn't even know even myself of how highly rated some of these games are. Like, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 is still one of the highest rated games of all time. Like, if you look up, like, any, like, highest rated game list, it's pretty much on there. Probably not the first one thing, but, you know, within the top 10, usually maybe top 15. Obviously, as games come out, you know, down the years, you know, people buy PlayStations and with some of these single-player games, and then, you know, obviously moves up. But also, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 holds the Guinness World Record for the highest selling action sports game for whatever action sports means. But still, I'm assuming, you know, kind of like what Kate was saying with kind of like Madden is not there. You know, it doubles the thing. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 is basically the highest rated PlayStation 1 game on Metacritic of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think it has a 98.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, also, that makes sense, too. Yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, circling back to the fact that these are critically acclaimed games, can you imagine the reception of this game? Like, had it not been a good video game, if it had tanked, if it was bad when it came out, like, how hard it would have tanked and been just labeled a cash grab?
Yeah.
Like, because of the proximity to the 900. Like, if this game hadn't been a masterpiece, people would have written it off so, so hard.
It was just amazing. Obviously, it won a lot of awards throughout the years. Obviously, best sports game almost every year. Fun fact, by the way, though, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 apparently lost, like, the best game of the year, whatever, to SSX, which also is a very fantastic game.
I love that game so much.
Which is funny because we're talking about all the skateboarding games and whatnot, but we kind of forget that snowboarding games at this time is also very, very popular.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
X Games, brother. Come on, man. X Games were...
You guys want to talk about Kelly Slater's Pro Surfer?
No, we do not.
And all of the pro extreme athlete games that this spawned.
I also feel like Crazy Taxi for some reason Crazy Taxi sticks into my brain, and I think it was the soundtrack that Crazy Taxi had. Like, oh, my favorite games: SSX, Pro Skater, Crazy Taxi, which I like. Somehow equate to all of the action sports games that I played growing up.
I do know when I was looking at some notes that did come up of just how like the arcade type style of like in the fast pace with the music that came like the genre type games, even though you're driving a taxi cab, that did come up quite a bit. But okay. No, this is obviously peak era for sports games, whether it be Tony Hawk. Because, I mean, even the like I said, the weird part we don't realize is Madden and, like, 2K, like we talked about on the Dreamcast thing, or, like, because if you look at the top-selling Dreamcast game, I believe it's NFL 2K, and it's
that was going to be my point here. I don't know how much this goes into kind of, like, timing or what the case is, but, you know, PlayStation launches in 2000. PlayStation 2 launches in 2000, and Madden 2001 is that console's, like, best-selling, you know, like, game, basically. So if you look at, like, the top 10 selling list for 2000 for PS2 games, it's Madden NFL, Tekken, SSX, NHL, Ridge Rider 5, Midnight Club, Smuggler's Run, Summoner, Time Splitters, Dead or Alive 2. Tony Hawk's not even on that list for the PS2. But if you look at, but if you look at the PS1, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 sells 1.5 million copies. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 sells 1.3 million copies. Gran Torino 2 sells 1.5 million copies. Like, I think it just comes at, like, that perfect moment of, like, hey, not everyone has a PlayStation 2, but you have a PlayStation 1, so let's play all these games that didn't launch on, like, the PlayStation 2.
So, kind of getting into the gameplay, because why we all want to play these games. Funny thing is, this game was inspired by Top Skater from Sega from 1997, 2 years earlier. Never played it, but apparently the devs really loved it. Obviously, Tony, as I mentioned before, they kind of like vary kind of like how the game progressed through years. So, basically, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1, you get these levels and timed events. It's funny because the collecting of items, like I have to collect skate and like the boxes and everything, actually comes from Super Mario 64 of collecting stars. Obviously, you get challenges. You have this arcade feel. Obviously, they ended up with multiplayer, which kind of you see throughout. And obviously, they add online play as that comes to. They have the main ones of basically trick attack, which is basically you do, you know, the highest trick of an area, highest tricks, graffiti. Is essentially you have to do the highest trick of an area. So basically, if you ride this rail, it turns green. And then in order to turn it red, you had to make a higher score on that rail. And then obviously, horse, you would do a you had 8 seconds to do a trick, and then the player had to.
I loved horse. Loved horse so much.
So did y'all have any of the multiplayer games? Because this is something that me and my brother played all the time. We just played multiplayer all the time.
Yeah, I played with my brother a lot. Horse was the main one. It was. For some reason, that was just one of my favorites because it was the easiest. Not easiest. It was the hardest, but it was, like, the funnest, I guess. I didn't really like Trick Attack that much.
I never played Trick Attack, to be honest.
Yeah, but Horse is the one that sticks out the most for me.
Yeah, I played Horse a lot, although eventually my brother and I, especially on Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, had to implement a rule about how long you could keep skating after the timer ran out.
Yes, and that is something that, obviously we'll talk a little bit more in panic, but that is something that I hate, probably the most part, and we had to implement a rule, because as a person who is a vert person, and my brother played more of the street and the manual and riding, basically it turned into we would just pick courses to where I got to pick a vert map to hopefully win. And then he would pick a street map. And then once they implemented some of these new mechanics, as we get into 3 and even later 2, it just sucked because he would do anything and then just run around and do a manual for the last 5 minutes when the timer ran out. And I was like, you're an asshole.
Yeah. Well, the trailer that they put out for Tony Hawk has somebody racking up like a 2 million point trick. And I'm watching it. I'm like, yeah, this game has always been broken. And they're celebrating that with this ad.
Yes. Yeah, it does. But no, so then we get to Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4, which we get the open world and in kind of even beyond into the more of the story-based stuff. I personally was not a fan of the open world going from the levels. It wasn't bad, but I guess for some reason, I just didn't care for the open world maps.
I loved them. And I think that, like, for me, that was it was where I got to just be more open, because I liked the street parts like a lot, and so for me a lot of Tony Hawk wasn't just vert, it was about like mixing things together, and I felt like I was able to get way more creative with the open worlds than just kind of being confined.
Yeah, and then obviously moving to play my player, which obviously, like you said, they do have a story mode. You do get kidnapped in a van, as you said, in Underground 2. Which obviously that kind of like the destruction era where they said we're going to go around and break everything we can with Bam Margera or whatever the heck
his name. Bam Margera, yeah.
Margera, yeah.
Whatever the heck his name is, what?
It's funny. What? I remember, so.
Are you discounting the cultural significance of Bam Margera right now?
He's also an asshole, though.
Yes, like, I mean, he's a terrible person. I'm not denying that at all. I'm just saying the cultural significance of it. You should know Bam Margera's name.
There are two ends of the skater spectrum. There's good guy Tony Hawk, and then there's Bam Margera. As somebody who was like surrounded by girls who were very obsessed with Bam Margera, I actually knew Bam Margera because of the CKY skate videos that they used to put out before anything else happened. So
maybe that's why I'm so sympathetic to like Bam Margera, because my uncle who got me into video games was a big skater, and he would like, hey man, come watch this. And we would just like watch people skate all the time, like on like VHS. And I was like, why are we watching this? I'm not a skater, bro. Like, I got football practice in an hour. And then when the first time I got on a skateboard, I fell, and I was like, this is dumb. I hate this.
I had the old CKY VHSs that were my cousin's boyfriend's that he lent me, and they were so great. So, like, the breaking stuff era or whatever, I thought that was fun because of that.
Yeah. Alex, were you Team Hawk or Team Margera?
I'm just saying, you know what Bam Margera's name is, and the fact that there's like Bam, like whatever his name is.
Bam Margera, whatever his name is. I know who he is. Also,
I heard Bam Margera that time.
Yeah,
there is no Team Bam Margera. It is always Team Hawk.
Yeah, for sure.
And you just have people that like circulate around him.
Yes. So then we get to the underground and beyond, where basically this is probably where obviously I have to phone off. I hated the ability to take off your skateboard or get off your skateboard. Also, for one, this is basically one of the things of the controls for getting off your skateboard were terrible. I don't know how you could skate so smoothly, but if you try to run a straight line, it was impossible.
Yes, it was really hard. But I counter this by saying I loved the open world of Underground and the way you could do careers in Underground and Underground 2. Underground 2 was a bad game because for a lot of it, it is pretty much just Underground. Like, it's a little boring. But what I really liked overall between Underground and Underground 2 that getting off your skateboard allowed you to do is it allowed you to get higher and to different levels. So, like, I remember busting a trick off of a really tall freaking billboard. And that was fun. Like, it just made it insane and it made it more creative. And being able to get up there, slap a sticker at the highest point, and then just go all the way down. Like, that was so fun. And it was, like, the achievement system with that was amazing. And it just made it more complex and more creative when it came to building out tricks. So I will defend it. And it taught me about the world. I know geographical places because I grinded them.
Is that more influential than Carmen Sandiego for you?
No, but I know. Okay. I know landmarks because I grinded them.
So I realized
you can sing Where in the World is Tony Hawk's Pro Skater?
Oh yes. My God, yes.
And it works.
Yes. Which kind of leads to the next point of what my counterpoint of all this stuff getting off your thing, the difficulty issue. Because in the other previous games, to get to those high points, do those tricks, you had to actually skate and jump off a ramp or go up a thing and basically ollie over it to get
to
the top.
But they weren't as high.
You clearly didn't play in some of the stadiums.
I did, but they weren't as high. It wasn't a billboard on a high rise.
Hey man, when you're busting a trick with Iron Man off of like a big ass building, there's something like visceral about that.
Yeah, I get that.
But I will say, but so basically they realized there was a difficulty issue because basically they kind of cut, almost like in the Guitar Hero.
It did make it easier.
Basically in the Guitar Hero games, which you see, if any, for any of those that follow those, basically they took the first one and they just kept building and building and building, but they made it more difficult, more difficult, more difficult. So it made, by the time they got to 4, just like if anybody who played Guitar Hero 3 or actually probably more Guitar Hero World Tour, the game is just overly difficult on purpose. And it really is hard for a new player to come in. And so that's when they started adjusting and making these, basically, let's call it too easy to sick difficulty challenges. And we start getting these, allowing you to progress the story a lot easier without having to do, like, these sick, like, million, you know, gore tricks and everything else. But they still kept in a lot of the challenges for all of the hardcore people who come in.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, I think even though it did get easier on some levels, the fact that they baked into the game the ability to challenge yourself routinely with harder things that would test your grit, that was something I really liked about it. And I think, like, because, like, you have, like, the car grabs and stuff. That was fun. Because grinding something after a car grab and using that momentum, like, the way the physics of the game and the way the physics of the game took into account how fast you were going, the height that you were coming from, and what you could do with that, that is something I think is really underrated. And even though the difficulty was easier, I think the fact that they put in those types of challenges to push you to use the game's physics in different ways is something that's actually really incredible about it.
So I do, so far as the difficult thing that I do like, and kind of you going with that, it seems like they kept, it could be wrong, but from my understanding, even just kind of playing it, they kept this high difficulty bar. And yes. So, but instead of lowering the bar, they just added extra bars underneath
it. Exactly.
Them. And that was what was great about it versus, at least in my opinion, what we kind of see today, where instead of just taking this high bar and adding bars underneath it, they completely lower the bar and then hopefully try to make bars above it. And that's where we get this whole, mm-hmm. like, is this game too easy or is it whatnot else? And so, like, that's why, at least for me, I didn't even, to be honest, I really didn't know so much the difficulty issue because obviously I played so much. And so, like, me moving game to game was a thing. And, like, except the challenges of being so difficult was still always there. And so it was great. And so I never felt like, why all of a sudden is the score going down?
Yeah, I think that's the perfect balance. It allows people to play who may not have that point of reference or just can't, like, hit those, like, finesse pieces, which, like, my brother was like that. But then it also keeps everything in for people like us who just grinded away at these games, pun intended. Right.
But it was just funny when I was thinking about researching it because it literally followed the same exact thing that happened in Guitar Hero, and it was just funny. Yeah. So kind of talking about some of these mechanics we talked about, obviously we had Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 where you just selected a pro player and you basically did a career mode with that. And then basically Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 comes and beyond they have Create a Skater.
Yes.
And what else?
Loved that.
Which apparently I didn't realize that you couldn't add technically, like, I guess, make a female skater until, I think, three.
Until three.
Or technically, it was actually 2X, even though they kind of released. It was actually in 2X before, but because of the delay or something like that, they ended up happening. 3, I think, either comes out before it, but technically it was originally supposed to be in a backtrack for 2X, and then 3. But that's where they did it as a kind of moving back stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then, so when you get the female player in 3, and then 3 and 4, they do this really weird thing with fashion, is it either completely, like, makes you completely masculine, or it, like, hyper-feminizes you, and it kind of sucks a bit. But in Underground and Underground 2, they, like, really take influence from streetwear, from actual female skaters, and you get the ability to do a hybrid of what you want, and you don't end up with a character that just looks really sexual or really, like, non-feminine. And so, like, there's, like, the creation aspect in Underground and Underground 2 are two of the things that I really, really love about the game, because I got to make a player or a character that, like, literally dressed like me. And it was so much fun.
So I do know from looking at stuff, and I remember talking about basically one of the pros, Alyssa Steamer or whatever, I think you could not actually put skirts on her at all.
Nope, not at all, because that's how she wouldn't play.
Yeah, and so I do know that was a big feature they had in there. Obviously, outside of the creative feature, we had the big additional features that we moved forward, because with Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1, you basically, did some grinds, some jumps, and some vert, and that was about it. And then they started adding everything. So basically in 2, you get, like, manuals, which we kind of mentioned a little bit before, where you're just kind of, like, kind of riding on your wheels and kind of extending out. Obviously, you have the switch stances and everything, which was great. I don't know about you. That actually makes a big difference to me, surprisingly, playing with the character, whether they have a regular stance or a goofy stance.
Yeah.
And then flipping that, obviously, depending on your points and how you land. The big thing that ended up hurting me outside of the manuals was the revert. I would think that would be the biggest fan of it, but then it kind of didn't kill the vert, but it made it just super hard. And so basically 1 and 2, I dominate my brother, and we kind of take turns. And then as we add the manuals into the revert, I start losing a lot because I'm used to, we go up and we do big time tricks. We come down with a score, not we do big time tricks. We revert into manual, into grind. And then we're halfway across the map. And then obviously we had the double tap tricks where you could do, like, the double flips for the boards. Obviously the balance meters of how you grind and what you're doing to keep stuff up. And eventually they added a slow motion stuff for the landing, and I personally hated that.
Oh, that sounds gross. Yeah,
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know what y'all's favorite like addition they had that they end up doing from playing.
I feel like the revert manual thing, I get the fun of it, but I also completely understand your frustration with it because it is a very specific skill to build out. And if you just don't or aren't interested in it, then it's really hard to compete against somebody in multiplayer. But it also, I feel like, was maybe a little bit enabling because there were definitely times where I would hit all three high score challenges on a level just by exploiting revert manual grind, you know, do a 360 kickflip out of a grind into another manual, like, and just hit, you know, 600,000 points. And it's like, oh, cool, I just did three challenges. But again, exploiting things. But again, it's also there. And I feel like if it's there, then using it isn't necessarily bad. So I don't know. It's just like, I probably could have challenged myself more to not use those things.
Yeah, I know from a person, like I said, from me doing it to though, I understand why they got them. And like I said, you were, it's kind of fun. But it did lead into like, oh, I beat three challenges off of one combo move versus like you have, especially in the older ones where you had basically, I think it's a minute and a half or 2 minutes to basically get these scores. And yeah, there was no 700,000 combo. It was how much can you actually rack up and do stuff.
But I think the biggest combo that I hit when I just played through one a few months ago was like, and granted, I only played through each level enough to get everything on it. It was like I hit like a 70,000 point combo.
Yeah, and you can do that on accident and doing stuff. I do enjoy the manuals. Obviously, the extended manuals are hard. The revert was where we kind of got tricky of like you're literally going up in the air, doing tricks, and coming down to revert into something else. And I'm like, oh, come on. But I do understand why they're there. The double tap tricks were also fun just because of what you could do with the flips and stuff. And then obviously the balance meters were just nice in general, of just like, you know, being able to extend it out with like skills and stuff and everything else.
The balance meters were fun.
Yeah.
And I feel like every iteration of them were slightly different, so it gave you something like to relearn.
Yeah.
And one of the other things that I really liked with the, for the mechanics pieces outside of the balance being my favorite, was just was how hard it was to recreate something if you weren't paying attention. So there was a lot of times where I was like, I just want to see what this does. And then I'd pull off something really cool, and then I would not be able to do it again for like months. And it was one of those things where like you had to learn the character. I mean, in the earlier games, you had to learn the character you're playing. You had to learn which moves they had. And then you had to remember what did what. Because it's, and it's funny too, because you don't have to know that. Like you can easily play the game without learning any of that stuff. But like, it was like an added challenge for me to replicate stuff that I had been doing. It's also what made playing horse really intense, because sometimes I would just mess around and do something and then I wouldn't remember. And then my brother would play and he couldn't land it because I had just messed around. But then I also like had no way of replicating that move in the future.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we had the diminishing returns, and that was one of the great factors that pushed you to learn a lot of different moves, you know, because if you just did the same move over and over again, you know, the first time it's 500, then it's 400, 300, to where, you know, if you can do like a, I remember you could do it so many times just screwing around, you could get 900 and you get like 1,000 points or something. It was ridiculously low. And then obviously as the stuff progressed, we had create a park, level editor, create a trick.
Loved that. Wait, create a trick. When was that?
That was definitely in the later games.
Okay. Yeah. I remember the level editor and create a park and all that. And it was super fun.
Not going to lie, I never touched any of it except for the achievements. I built squares in my zoos, and I definitely am not building parks.
I had fun with it.
It definitely one of the things that people love. I mean, I'm not going to act like I said, obviously I know I didn't, but I'm not going to discredit it because it is something that I know people love doing. And the funny thing is, even a lot of the reviews for Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5, they're like, man, people are creating better parks than what the hell the devs actually designed.
That's kind of what blows my mind about that game being bad, because the mechanics from one are there. Like the base game you could still do. You just need to design good parks and have like balanced skaters that offer a variety of experiences. Like, I don't want to say it's not hard because I'm not a game dev, but like, it's not hard.
I just don't know how it looks that bad for being.
Yeah, like, really go look at actual skate parks and design something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so moving from all that stuff, kind of like we kind of touched on a little bit, but basically Tony Hawk Pro Skater influence. Basically, this game blew up. It blew up a lot, and it helped a lot of people and basically almost transcended an entire, almost generation, as we talk about, of basically the popularity of sport skateboarding, it was already increasing, as we talked about, kind of the 900 happening a few months before this release, so it was getting there. X Games are coming around, but like, basically, I'll probably let y'all talk about it, but like, there's been thousands and thousands of people who literally said, I picked up a skateboard and just wanted to skateboard literally because of this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was not an athletic child, but I still was like, I want to be a skateboarder. Didn't get very far. My brother got further into that than I did. But yeah, like, it just, there was something very fun and engaging and inspiring and attainable about it.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite moments in life was learning that my cousin's then boyfriend, now husband, was a semi-pro with Fast Forward. That was before it was called Zoomies. And he helped me build my first skateboard. Don't date skateboarders unless they're Tony Hawk. I learned that growing up. But like, what it really did was like, there was a solid piece of my life where I only wore Element and Volcom. Like,
I love it.
That was what I did. And then I had, I think Audios. I had skate shoes. Like, I was obsessed with skate shoes. I had bright pink it was black with bright pink, and I saved up so much money to buy a pair of Audios. And then I got to replicate them in the game, which was awesome. And then the same thing happened with Vans. Like, there's so many brands that I gravitated towards because of this game and because of the create your own character, because it wasn't so, I guess, like I said earlier, like, I got to make her look like dress like me. I got to make mm-hmm. her dress how I wanted to dress. And then I saved up money to dress like her. But I never looked as good because I wanted to wear the big baggy pants with like the tighter shirt. Never looked as good, but it looked great there. But so much of my wardrobe was influenced by that. And that actually stuck around for my brother too. Because when my brother played, he was obsessed with all of the shoes, and then I had them. And then when my brother started getting older, my brother exclusively wears Vans now.
Okay, I thought you meant your brother wore tight shirts and baggy pants.
He's doing like the current Gen Z thing of like fitted joggers, and I don't like it. That aspect was super, super important to me, and so were collecting stickers and slapping them on things.
Yeah.
Hooligan.
Yes, which obviously, as I can say, included fashion of, and then kind of the music. I see why you picked up your skateboard for all that stuff there, Kate.
I
asked you why you picked up a skateboard and you went on with clothes.
It was an aesthetic. It was the whole thing, but I was actually able... I only ever did it once, but I did do a kickflip and I could ollie. Those are the two things I could do.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Yeah. Anything else, and I fell. I ollied once, tried to kickflip, busted my face, and I was like, all right, I like hitting things with pads on. So I'm just gonna stay in my lane and watch my uncle do kickflips and, you know, grind on rails, and we'll just talk about it after.
You knew how you wanted to get concussions. I respect that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I wanted a prolonged concussion, not the immediate one. That's what I wanted.
I attempted to jump downstairs one time. Oh, no. Everybody on this podcast knows how uncoordinated I am. It didn't go well. It went just like you would think. And then I learned to just stay on the ground and ollie. And then I would watch my friends do stuff.
I will say, after my uncle saw me like bust my face trying to do a kickflip, he got me like a fancy Razor scooter with like the wheelie thing on the back. And I would just ride around on
that.
That's
adorable.
While my uncle and his friends would ride on the skateboard.
Hit your ankle?
Yeah. So that was my trick. How hard can I whip myself in the ankle? Just basically.
I will say, for picking up skateboards, there was a skateboarding club in high school. I had three friends who were in that skateboarding club, and they would go to a specific like skate park. And I got the chance to take pictures of them when I was in yearbook. And that's some of like the best pictures I've ever taken in my life. And that yearbook is somewhere here. I don't know where. Otherwise, I would hold it up to the camera. But like, it was really fun. And so I knew people who like picked it up. And they were good. They actually did legit things.
Yeah. So kind of like as Kate was saying, this kind of includes the fashion, music, which we'll obviously talk about later, and then culture. I mean, this includes, as once again, Kate already mentioned, baggy club pants, graffiti, stickers, carrying a damn boombox, basically the Chad Muska signature, where he basically skated with a little mini boombox around. I will say when it comes to create a signature, create a character, obviously I made my brand in doing this of basically nice baggy cargo shorts with a hoodie, and that's what I've been wearing for the past like 20 years. It was already in there in place in the game, and I just basically it was easy to replicate. One of the things that Tony Hawk has stated, basically he's been most proud of the franchise, is basically it represented the culture well from lifestyle, music, attitude, and actual skating, and it basically it taught a whole generation of kids what proper skating can be. And that's been like what he's said over the plenty of the years of like, as much as the game's been successful and all the stuff, but what it did outside of the game. And kind of like to kind of go off of that point of like, it kind of launched skateboarding into mainstream. Yeah. Obviously, it launches, you know, right after the famous 900 by Tony Hawk. It also changed kind of the way the perception of, like, what people thought of skaters. And they weren't just, like, basically, like, street punks that ran around and broke stuff. Except apparently Bam said, hey, I'm going to bring that back.
Yes, he did.
But, you know, like, we get all the things of, you know, just people run around going skaters and stuff. They're just little punks and they do all this stuff and they break everything and do everything else. And this kind of, like, brought some legitimacy to actual... not just skateboarding, but like pro skaters, X Games, and everything else. Which kind of goes into the roster of like the skaters' careers. Basically, it helped a lot of these pro skaters within the game become essentially household names. And I don't think people realize, especially when it comes to like sports games, of like how much playing sports games and recognizing whether it be players, skaters, or whatever, that like just, it's almost like a learning of skill of like, you're learning people and like what they do and how good they are and everything else.
Unless it's NCAA and then you don't know who the players are.
Yeah, well, that's why you just download the rosters and then you know who they all are.
Elisa Streamer was like my Mia Hamm for skate. Like it was like it had the same effect on me. She had the same effect on me in that way. Like her inclusion that it had that same effect as like seeing Mia Hamm on stuff. But
no, it's cool because obviously they've been making, they kind of did like behind the scenes and they've been kind of making documentaries and everything of lately, especially as a kind of resurgent, not only just in skateboarding in general, but kind of like with the new game coming back out and everything else. Basically, they all kind of state how much this helps their career and they talk about great, like this popularity and everything. Kareem Campbell stated like basically he became like the most famous like because of this game and everything. And also the fun fact is they got paid. They actually made more money from this game and royalties in this franchise than they did being pro skaters. They got paid 100. They made 190K just off of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1, I believe.
That's a lot for that time period.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They were like, oh, wow, that's
a cool game paying for likenesses? I like this. Good guy Tony Hawk remains good guy.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Tony Hawk has said multiple times over the years that Tony Hawk Pro Skater is basically the reason people actually know my name. not how famous I am, not how many medals I have, not the 900. Literally, Tony Hawk Pro Skater is the reason so many people know my name. Obviously, they just released the documentary, I think, like last month, Pretending I'm Superman, where he goes into more depth and they talk with some of the other skaters and they do everything else. But the cool thing is, like, because we're now talking about, like, kind of with the new remastered and they kind of, like, updated the roster of the new generation and everything else. But it's crazy seeing some of the interviews of talking to some of these people. One, not only just the old roster coming back, but some of the new, you know, like the pros now of like how much they feel like it's an honor to be in this game. And then like they talk about like we've talked about on the NCAA cover, you know, for college athletes of like that is my goal. And that's how they talk about it. Tyson Jones, who was the 2018 Thrasher of the Year, basically like one of the best skaters we have, who's also in the game. He's literally stated that he learned a lot about skateboarding. And basically the reason he's here from Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And that's just like actual like people out there skateboarding, and they've talked about it so much of like he just a whole generation of like he just talked about like growing up and seeing people that, you know, skateboarding was kind of frowned upon, and then like this game comes out and now parents kind of like go skateboard, I don't care, it was great. My brother skateboarded, like we kind of mentioned, you all skateboarded. My brother's dad attempted to skateboard and did a drop in, and he like nearly broke his hip and said, "I'm never skateboarding again." But that's, you know, we got parents out there, and that's why the, even the commercials you see with the old people out there just trying to do it, like, that's kind of what this game did.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I remember most was, so my, again, my cousin's boyfriend at the time, he had skate magazines and stuff, like the actual, like, pro skating magazines, and I would get like the month after, because he'd get a new one, and then I would get the, I'd get the other one, or I would actually like, I would save up and buy some of them. And one of the cool things was, I like skateboarding, I mean, skateboarding has never been like just white, like it's been kind of diverse, but, like, the pros were pretty white and all male, with the exception of Elisa Streamer, who was the very first one. But one of the cool things that I got to see, like, in real time, was profiles on up-and-coming skaters, and get to see the space diversify. And, like, part of me thinks a lot of that has to do with the accessibility that skateboarding gained by being able to be in your house. Like, one of the ones that, like, actually really stuck out for me is Nyjah Houston, because I remember when I had first started reading about him, when I had first started reading magazines and stuff like that, he was in a feature when he was, like, 14. He was, like, the youngest pro or something like that. And I watched, you know, the intro video for the new roster for Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, and Nyjah Houston's in there. And it was one of those moments where I was like, I remember when this kid was a teen, when he was a kid, because we were pretty much the same age, and he's in here. And for me, there was something that, like, about the game, and we'll get into the roster, but, like, I always felt included in it. And it made me go, like, seek out other things, like the Lords of Dogtown. I didn't realize one of the dudes that literally made skateboarding famous is Tony Alva, and he's Mexican-American. Like, that's just really cool. And, like, I don't feel like I felt that with a lot of other things. And obviously just the ability to pick up my own board. But that's, I don't know. I got, like, really happy and excited and a little emotional watching the video of all the people that are on the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 remaster roster. Like, it's so massive, it's insane, and it's so incredibly diverse that, like, it's just good guy Tony Hawk remains good guy.
yeah, and I mean, I don't, yeah, like, and I don't know, like, Alex's perspective on this, but I never thought that skating was also, like, very white, because, like, my uncle that I used to hang out with and got me into games and, like, this kind of, like, punky kind of stuff is on the white side of my family. And he's a very, like, this, that, like, that's a white man. But all of his friends that he hung out with and he was skating with were, like, Asian and, like, Mexican and, you know,
yeah,
black guys. Like, it was a very diverse group of people that I was surrounded with while he was skating. And I was kind of sitting there, yeah, you know, like, damn, like, look at all these cool dudes doing all these tricks. So, even, yeah, like, before I was super into the game, like, I was already around kind of these dudes skating. So I'm glad that Tony Hawk brought that to, like, the forefront to show, like, other people who might not have that same experience. They're like, hey, like, this is anyone can do a kickflip. Don't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, I grew up in a pretty white town, but not exclusively white. And so, like, yeah, I did see a good number of white skaters, but I also saw Pacific Islanders and Asian skaters, and I saw black skaters and black punks and, like, and, you know, Latinx skaters. And, like, it was kind of just everybody. Like, and so, yeah, I grew up with the impression that skateboarding is for everybody, which it is.
Yeah. It was one of those things where, like, I feel like a lot of people have stories of, like, oh, you like this thing, this is a white thing to like. Like, why do you like that white people stuff? Like, I mean, I got that with a lot of sci-fi, got that with, you know, anime every now and then. But, like, I never got that with skateboarding. Like, ever. And part of it probably has to do because it is rooted in punk, which is very against any sort of systemic oppression.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those things that, like, was just really cool looking back on it. Because I don't know pro skater history, like, the back of my hand, but I do remember watching the pro side slowly diversify in those magazines as more games came out. And that was something that was really cool.
Yeah. It's funny because we talk about all this stuff of, like, knowing players and doing everything and obviously diversifying and everything else, but it's funny because, like, I've seen all, like, you know, because I enjoyed all this stuff, like, I actually have gone to X Games. Like, I got to see Bomb Burnquist do Big Air, and I knew who that was from these games. My Instagram picture from, like, 8 years ago is literally Bussy Lassick. And the funny thing is, he was doing rally cars, and he held the car together with duct tape to get silver. But at the end of the day, like, I only knew him from the Tony Hawk games, and I was like, you're from Tony Hawk. And he's like, I'm doing Rally Car. I don't care. You're from Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
And it's, and then, like, obviously I've seen Tyshawn Jones and Nyjah Houston perform, and a few of the other people that are in the you know, that are in the new game. Like, I've actually watched them skate in the X Games, and it's just great to see. And then, like I said, hearing them talk about how much the game, you're growing up, and it's funny because even some of them are like, you know, I'm a little young, so the games were kind of like before me somewhat, but I remember hearing about them, and I remember my parent, you know, like either my parents or like my older brother telling me, like, this is great and amazing, and you should just try this out, and whatnot else. And obviously, between the punk and rock genre of, like, it's basically anti, you know, a lot of things. And so I never got the whole stuff either, which we'll kind of talk about in the music in general and everything, which kind of moves into the roster of everything, of, like, the original roster. Obviously, I'll probably go with the original roster, and then they obviously had a few core key people. And I won't really talk about some of the new players just because we're kind of time-wise, but obviously the original roster, basically Tony Hawk, obviously, Rune Glifberg, who is by far the GOAT of the entire Tony Hawk series, and I even linked an entire article that's written about how great he is and how it doesn't matter what you think, he's the best Tony Hawk pro skater. And then you have Kareem Campbell, who's actually my other player, because I basically played with two people, Rune Glifberg for the vert, and then Kareem Campbell for street stuff, and that's all I played.
Wait, so are they only the best because you say that they are the best, or they're, like, statistically the best?
So Rune Glifberg is the best vert skater, I believe, statistically in the game. He's also just the best player and has the best moves. Kareem Campbell was obviously just my favorite pick for the second one.
Bam Margera not on that list.
He doesn't actually come in. He's not part of the original roster, actually.
Yeah.
He's actually not part of the original roster. Then we have Alessa Steamer, Bob Burnquist, Jeff Rowley, Bucky Lassick, Chad Muska, and then Andrew Reynolds and Jamie Thompson. Weird thing is, obviously, these are funny thing is, like, basically Glifberg, Campbell, Steamer, Lassick, and then Thompson are actually in the first, like, the Acclaim games that we mention all the time. And they actually leave the series and they're never seen again until 1 and 2 again. So even they knew the stuff was going downhill, apparently. and then we get to, like, basically when you get to, like, 3 and 4 and stuff, they add basically Rodney Mullen, Eric Costin, Bam, Mike Valerie or whatever. I think he's from,
Mikey,
like,
Mike Valley.
Yeah, I believe he's from, like, Motorhead.
Yeah,
he's, like, actually Motorhead. And then obviously Kate's favorite of Steve Caballero.
No, it was really cool because when Steve came in, I got to play as a Latino. Like, that was really, really cool for me. Like, it's one of those things where, like, yeah, like, I also loved playing as Mike Valley. I played him a lot just because he was like this angry dude. But Steve Caballero was one of those things where it was like, I got like the same feeling that I got when I played Alessa Steamer. Like, it was just really cool to see ourselves be a part of that narrative. And I don't know, it was just really awesome. And I thought he was great, although I couldn't land a lot of his moves. It was one of those things where I played a skater that I really had no business playing because I had a hard time landing his actual specials. But it was fun. So then I would just revert to Mike Valley because that was the one I could play. But I don't know, it was... Because I know, like, reading these names, like, it is a predominant... It does skew, like, heavily white, but... I think that, like, a lot of that was just of the time. And I think that, like, moving forward, especially with the new roster, which, like, for 1 and 2, like, that thing is hella diverse, which I think is just really cool. Which, going back, because I'm sure they'll make the opening video available somewhere for you to watch, but, like, for the older skaters, they do this thing where they actually show picture. They show them skating, not just, like, in their prime, but they actually have, like, clips of them skating as old people. And it's really cool. And so, and they use pictures of them now. And Steve Caballero is actually really cool.
Yeah, they re-scanned all the older skaters. I don't know if you all had any favorite. Obviously, mine was Rune Glifberg. I love the Kreichter and the Kickflip McTwist specials. Obviously, Kareem Campbell with the Ghetto Bird flip, which was great. And then, basically, I liked their specials. I was good with them. That's who I used. That's all I used, unless I was forced to multiplayer to use somebody else.
Yeah. I used Bucky a lot, but I couldn't tell you why. Like, as a kid, I haven't played him as an adult.
Is it because you're really Steve Rogers?
Maybe. It could be. It could be that I was drawn to that. But yeah, no, and also just playing as Tony Hawk, because, like, why wouldn't you want to be Tony Hawk?
Yeah.
Because he runs Goofy, and I could not run on the Goofy stance, and it bugged me.
as a left-handed person, like, all the more reason to play as Tony Hawk.
I know, that's what's the weird part. I couldn't do it for some reason. It bugged me. I thought I tried to play Tony Hawk because I'm like, left-handed, we can do this. And then I realized I don't like this.
Yeah. What I don't like is playing as anyone who Mongos.
Oh, yeah.
It looks so unnatural.
Yeah, I played a lot of Chad Muscat just because I liked the boombox. If I wasn't playing as like one of like the unlockable characters or something like that, I was playing as Chad Muscat.
I had the biggest crush on Andrew Reynolds. That's why I liked Andrew Reynolds. Never played as him, liked looking at him.
Yeah. Speaking of the unlockable characters, I'm only going to name a few of them because there have been a ton of them over the years, so I'm only going to name a few. Spider-Man, Boba Fett, Darth Maul, Wolverine, Doom Guy, Officer Dick.
Okay, I was like, you have to have that one in there. I mean, I know that obviously, like, that's a real, you know, yeah. ACAB, but realistically, like, that was the first and only unlockable in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1.
I think there was one other. I don't know if he was the only. I'm pretty sure he might have been the only one. I think there was another one. If you used a cheat code, you could unlock somebody. But I can't remember.
Oh, that might be. There was one. There was one that you could do through a code. But he was the only one that you unlocked through gameplay.
Yes, that is correct. I personally love playing with Spider-Man. Obviously, I love Spider-Man. But also, the way they incorporated Spider-Man's powers into the stuff in the specials. Like, he used it. He would throw his board and shoot it with webs and bring it back to him. And it was just great and awesome.
Didn't Wolverine just, like, punch his board and, like, spear it?
Yeah,
I think was one of his moves, like just dumb, goofy stuff like that. But it was great.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why actually the unlockable characters were great because they incorporated their actual, you know, character into like their moves and everything else. I don't know.
I played a lot of Spider-Man. Like I almost exclusively played as Spider-Man. And I'm also gonna like mention this just because Star Wars Twitter is crazy and a lot of releases come from there. But it was Jango Fett, not Boba Fett.
Oh my bad. Whatever.
But just I'm just just covering our bases. But yeah, I played a lot as Spider-Man. And then, like, on the very, like, small chance, like, opportunities that I got to play Iron Man in the third one when I used to play at my uncle's house, I played as Iron Man because, like, it's just cool jumping off big stuff with Iron Man.
I don't know if you had a favorite unlockable, Kate.
Jango Fett.
There you go. which kind of moves into the... So from all the roster and all this other stuff, kind of moves into probably the last biggest but why, though, and probably the most thing is essentially the music. Tony Hawk Pro Skater is renowned for his music. It's even been stated by some of the people and the creators and producers as basically Kevin Overbay, basically the producer of like the reboot of going, anyone who knows the game knows the music is just as important and just as important as the gameplay. And it's kind of funny because I looked up some of the quotes because obviously we would talk more music, but like one of the creators of the original game, Joel Jett, basically is quoted, at the video games at the time, they all had orchestra music. And we were just like, fuck, man, we can just pick awesome rock and roll. This is cool shit. So we just spent a ton of money on licensing it and stuck it in the game. That was their philosophy of why they have all the music in there.
I'm into it.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, that's great. And then obviously, like I said, this music ends up introducing an entire generation to basically punk rock, ska, and hip hop. I mean, obviously the punk rock was there. I don't think people realize how much Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 actually has a ton of hip-hop in.
That's yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, basically, like I said, it influences basically the taste in music, energy, and introduces basically tons of old bands to new audiences and basically just new people to new bands.
Fun fact, I know about Johnny Cash because of Ring of Fire, because of Tony Hawk soundtrack.
That's kind
of
cool.
But also... my biggest music, because my dad was a huge punk, and so like he has like the Clash and the Cramps, like he has all of those like actual like vinyls and everything. But like one of the things that Tony Hawk did was it made me be able to get like music literacy that would make like I could speak my dad's language in music, because the Cramps, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, all of that stuff was something that was like it put us like on the same plane, and it gave and the Beastie Boys, like all of that, it like made me understand what my dad loved, and it helped him understand me too. And then also the amount of hip hop bands that I would have never heard of, including Cut Chemist, and like that, like I would have never learned about them if it wasn't for Tony Hawk.
I mean, I can for sure say that probably influencing my music and what I listen to, even to probably today, and probably from these games. Like, I burned literally CDs at the time, you know, back in, for the young folks, you had to burn a CD to get, like, your mixtapes and stuff. And so,
oh, and ska, Goldfinger. I would have never known what ska was if it wasn't for
For but that. I literally burned just Tony Hawk soundtrack CDs. And I just basically said 1 and 2 are the CD, 3 and 4 are the CD. And like I said, it's funny because it even continues. Much as we talk about 1 and 2, that'll probably be the focal point. Like, even like I said, up to American Wasteland, the game may suck, but the soundtrack is still great.
Rage Against the Machine, I also...
So, like, we get Rage Against the Machine, Dead Kennedys, Goldfinger. Obviously, I'm Superman. Yeah. Basically, it's become so iconic. I mean, they basically can make a case that that song literally in this game makes who they are. And it also might be the most famous
documentaries literally called like based on that.
Yeah. Also, Matt was listening while he was writing the notes for these. He was listening to the soundtracks, and when Superman came on, I made him turn up his surround sound so that I could hear it in my office.
Yeah, I got that.
He even restarted it for restarted the song for me when I requested it because.
But it's just funny because like that Superman thing, it might be the most famous song in video game history, from what some people say. Like, it, like especially when it comes like. If you hear that song, you know where it's from and you know what it is. Like, we talk about like Final Fantasy and the music and we get all that and we know it's nice, but like the songs that we get here from actual like bands and everything, like you said, not just orchestra music, is fantastic.
It's how I found Dead Kennedys and Bad Religion, and it's also how I realized like what Anthrax was too. Like I don't think I would have had a robust knowledge of punk and rock if it wasn't for this game. Yeah, I mean, that, my dad, yes, but I feel like I probably would have rebelled a little bit and, like, not wanted to listen to that stuff to just, like, be that way. But, like, I went the other way once I heard it.
Yeah, because, I mean, basically, Bad Religion has stated that Tony Hawk Pro Skater made them famous. I mean, he literally, the song You that's in there. Obviously, we get, I mean, we've mentioned some of them, but, like, Green Day, Offspring, Dead Kennedys, Primus.
Sublime!
Sublime. Even Motorhead.
Yeah.
Motorhead.
The Suicide Machines.
Yeah. Even Motorhead. A lot. Even Motorhead has even talked about like Tony Hawk Pro Skater like reviving their fan base because as they were aging, because they're obviously like an older band, and they said once this came out and we were in the games, all of a sudden we had all these young fans that were like 18, 19, 20, like, yeah, we're at a rock metal concert, and they're like, who are you? But this is great.
I will say this, Hot Topic made a lot of money off of folks with those vintage band tees, and I say that as somebody who worked at Hot Topic and not only sold them, but took full advantage of my 40% off discount to buy a bunch of old things, including the Doors. Like, I don't know.
I mean, we get a revival, and like I said, punk rock. My Chemical Romance... MCR has actually stated that they would not even be a band if it weren't for Tony Hawk Pro Skater.
I feel like it has to be the same thing with Good Charlotte, too.
Yeah, I don't even know, but like I said, we get a bunch of bands. No Obviously, I didn't list all of them, but like there is a bunch of bands that come later that literally basically say Tony Hawk Pro Skater not only just made us a band, but gave us like even just promoted us to become a like a renowned or have any type of famous band. Mm-hmm. Alex, who do you got here? Because I know you have kind of been like between Kate and I talking about all the bands.
I'm very excited.
I mean, like you were saying, like this was my introduction to ska and to like punk that wasn't on the radio. Like this is how I learned about so much music beyond what I was just hearing from my day to day. Like my parents didn't really give me the dial in the car, so my exposure was a little bit limited. And this was just like a way to kind of blow that wide open and get introduced to all these other genres. And then to, you know, like go on and like in high school playing in a band and like, I don't know that I would have necessarily had the drive to do that if I hadn't been introduced to music through these games. I honestly, like, it's just a killer soundtrack. Like, you turn the game on, and there are times where I'm like, I'm not doing great this run. I need to restart, but I don't want to stop listening to this song.
Accurate. Or you have to set the correct song up for the actual...
Yes. Although, where it fell apart for me was in with Xbox introducing the ability to put music on your console. Yeah. Like the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 soundtrack, I don't know that I could tell you what it was because I just listened to what we had loaded onto the Xbox.
I never did that. I never loaded anything.
I did.
It was a pain, honestly. It wasn't worth it.
It was definitely a pain. Adrian, did you get the band too? All I've learned from this episode is Alex joined a band and became a skater.
Tried to become a skater. Did not do well.
Yeah, I mean, and I know I've said it like a bunch of times before, but like the only like real entrance into this world is Tony Hawk Pro Skater and like my uncle. And my uncle's like a big, even to this day, like when we go, because he was the one that Stefani stayed with him. She was doing her internship this summer. Like, they're big punk people. Like, all we listen to is punk music. I watch, like, my, you know, little cousin run around in, like, a little mini mosh pit, like, by himself, listening to, like, Less Than Jake and stuff. And when I wasn't with him, my family didn't listen to, you know, ska or just, you know, general punk music. So my, you know, when I would go back and hang out with my uncle, I'd be like, hey, you know, I know the words of this song kind of thing. And like looking at the Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2, before we recorded, I talked about I didn't know if I wanted to go out and pay, you know, X amount of money for this. But looking at the soundtrack for this, like this has, you know, A Tribe Called Quest. Yeah. It just has, like, everyone that I would listen to. You know, Less Than Jake, Real Big Fish. Like, all the ska bands that are literally still on my playlist today are on this thing. And I can do that while playing Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 that really, you know, didn't have as many. I mean, had punk bands, but, like, not as many as I listen to now is super exciting. Like, I'm still a big person to ska and punk to this day. So, you know, and it's because of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 and that kind of, like, avenue and that genre of.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, obviously we get the punk rock, but, like, the fact that people, like, forget about the other, like, hip-hop and ska and everything.
I was about to say, also, like, Del the Funky Homo Sapien, I would have had no idea who he was without Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3. And, like, also, even with the punk and hip-hop, outside of that, there's a band called Oso Motley, which is, also in there. Like, exactly. That's how I found out who Oso Motley was, and I got to go see them live at ACL one year, and it was one of the best experiences because, like, I learned who they were through this game. And they're a band that uses Spanish and English and hip hop and like actual like Latin American sounds, and they combined it all. And I learned about them from frickin' Tony Hawk. And then even like Aesop Rock, like I found him from Tony Hawk too.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, it's a amazing soundtrack. It always does.
Redman was on it too, right?
I think maybe I think 4, maybe, if I'm correct. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so, but I'm not 100% sure.
Which is kind of Soul was there.
Yes. Which kind of funny because we kind of mentioned earlier about like punk rock music and kind of the themes of punk rock music. This was not, it brought stuff to the mainstream, but also it wasn't without necessarily controversy in general of, which is kind of weird when today's age if people are confused that Rage Against the Machine actually says, basically, we don't like the police. If you apparently never listened to any of their music. Same with basically Dead Kennedys and Police Truck, which is by far my favorite song in all of the entire soundtracks. And apparently the most, as much as Superman basically defines the game, Police Truck ends up being like probably the song that ends up getting used the most, especially as we move forward, I guess just in life in general, of this song was very controversial because obviously it's basically an anti-police, anti-capitalism, and basically police brutality basically brought to more mainstream of this entire theme of the song. And basically if you've ever listened to Dead Kennedys or any of these bands in general, but the funny thing outside of this controversy, people like getting this mainstream is Dead Kennedy fans were actually mad because it was included because they felt the band became sellouts and they abandoned their anti-corporate beliefs.
Yeah. I just want everybody to remember, not only was it people being surprised that, like, Rage Against the Machine was political and is against police and Republicans, but also I want everybody to remember that Tony Hawk said, fuck the police, a very long time ago, and it is not a new thing, and you shouldn't have been surprised when he said it recently.
If you ever listened to any of these soundtracks, I don't know what you thought you were listening to.
Yeah, I was gonna say this too. I know you brought like the Goldfinger thing, and that was like just a song that I knew like on my uncle's like you know burn CDs, but he never had Police Truck like Dead Kennedys. I think I heard Police Dead Kennedy. I think I heard that song in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2. So when I think of Tony Hawk Pro Skater, I think of Police Truck Dead Kennedys.
Yeah.
For me.
So yep. It might be. All I know is this is probably my far, and obviously, funny thing, if Neversoft obviously takes the song and throws it in Guitar Hero, and it's just as fun. but it is funny when you listen, like I said, obviously do recent stuff of just like how much people, because as much we talk about Rage Against the Machine, they don't have some of, not that their music aren't, they don't have some of their more like overt because it's what, songs.
They just have Guerrilla Radio.
Yeah, Guerrilla Radio, which obviously still has its own themes, but it's definitely not as overt as, you know, like... in the name of and stuff and everything, but Police Truck is by far the most overt song. I mean, maybe not the most, but like the most renowned revert song out of all these songs or these soundtracks.
Yeah, I think that was also one of the reasons that, like, even I think there were two reasons why I felt really included in there are two reasons why in my head I remember the roster being more diverse than it actually was. Like, that was something my brain made mm-hmm. up, but it was because, like, there was a through line for the culture that it represented that, like, very much let it, like, it wasn't just white dudes on skateboards. Like, it was, yeah. it was literally representative of the type of music, like, so many different types of people made. It was representative of different types of, like, cultures and identity within skating that were, like, pivotal to making it a big thing. And then, like, on top of that, like, once they entered, like, the making your own character, like, it just felt like I belonged there. And that's something that I think is really powerful for a game to do from both mm-hmm. play style and soundtrack, because it would have been real easy to just leave off all that hip hop and yeah. just do yeah. like what the stereotypical skateboarder is. Right. Like, the fact that they included such a wide range of, like, what the people who skate look like and, like, listen to and are, that to me is really cool. And I never had a problem with skin color, which is my biggest complaint with a lot of with character creations, that they give you so few skin color options.
Yeah, that was going to be my question, Kate, because we're pretty, you know, similar in skin color. We're both pretty dark when it comes to, like, the, you know, genre of, you know, Chicana Hispanic.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, as you're talking, like, I think this is, like, the first game I played outside of, like, an MMO that obviously has much more resources, that I got to make someone who looked at least yes. relatively similar to me in a video game outside of MMOs at the time.
Oh, 100%. And so something that I have to mention here is Sunset Overdrive, because Sunset Overdrive's entire gameplay is Tony Hawk. And it was actually the first game Matt ever bought me, and it made me so happy. And I beat it all in, like, two sittings because I just wouldn't stop playing it. But a lot of the mechanics are very similar to Tony Hawk mechanics, and the character creation is, like, extremely robust in the same way Tony Hawk's was. And it's crazy because, Adrian, now that I'm actually thinking about it, you're right. Like, I think that there are very few games outside of MMOs where I had, even now, the ability to make somebody who actually looked like me and actually had a skin tone like mine. Like, that, yeah. that's something that I think gets really understated when you think about, like, character creation, because, like, they'll throw yeah, in so dude, many cause... things. But, like, okay, I can be pink, white, or super dark. Where is just, like, I can't even be tan. Like, give me a tan, maybe. Or, like, a brown, like, an actual brown. Like, they usually don't even do that. And then some games even just do, like, pink, white, slightly tanned. That's all you get. You don't yeah. even get any of the brown skin.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about even in, like, Knights of the Old Republic, which is one of my favorite RPGs ever, and their character creation is, like, a white dude, an Asian guy, and a brown guy. And if you're the brown guy, you either get, like, a big fro, or you get a buzz cut, or you get cornrows. Like, that is, like, yeah. your fucking options, right? And I have better character creation in Tony Hawk Underground and, like, that this genre than I did in even my favorite RPGs growing up.
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
Alex, how much did you put into the music of creating your character?
I feel like I didn't have to put in, like, a ton of effort if I wanted to make it look like me, because Matt, you and I look like default characters.
I know. Like I said, when you throw on a hoodie and you throw on cargo shorts, those were, like, the default clothes. I didn't even have to buy anything. I would have had so much money.
Yeah, I feel like more what I did with a character creator, and again, this just speaks to, like, the issue of character creators and privilege, was, like, my brother and I, or my sister and I, would, like, make up characters and, like, pick their move sets and design what they look like and how they dress. And, like, for us, it wasn't really, like, let's dress ourselves up as skaters. It was like, let's just make a character. Like, let's just do something, like, way outside of our experiences, or, like, you know, just, like, it was a toy to play with rather than, like, oh my gosh, a chance to see myself on screen.
Yeah. Honorable mention, Def Jam, Fight for New York. I also got to look like myself, which is, you know, different kind of genre of sports game.
But. Yeah. So obviously that's about all I have. Cause I mean, obviously it did a lot, but I mean, the music is probably the biggest but why, though, of all of this, outside of, like, the influence of just, like, how much we've all talked about, whether it be you got on a skateboard, you had a brand, or, you know, you put on some clothing. Like, my entire also, probably outfit, wardrobe is probably defined by this, and we're good.
You had a lot of Vocom when we met.
Oh, no. I
have. No, also, I was going to say, like, thinking about Sunset Overdrive, like, that game, it was a Tony Hawk game, actually. Like, I don't think that that game or those, like, those devs make that game without Tony Hawk as a foundation. And if you don't believe so, you can at me and we can talk about it. But, like, down to the soundtrack being, like, highly multicultural representative and just the mechanics of the game itself, like, I don't know. Are we in final thoughts now?
We're probably in fun facts, and then we can go
fun
to final
facts.
Thoughts.
Okay.
So let me get some fun facts for everybody, and then we'll get to final thoughts. One fun fact. This game was originally started out to be a racing game. As I said, it was inspired by Top Skater, and apparently
they wanted to be
a racing game. next one, Activision wasn't Tony Hawk's first choice. He originally went to Midway, which no longer exists. Maybe they should have done something. But liked what Activision was doing more and had more say in the creation. Because I know we hadn't really touched on it a little bit, and I meant to kind of like you talked about it. But Tony Hawk overall, maybe I don't know about the last one per se, but I know for the first like five games, and especially this remaster, has basically been with step for step and basically his hand all over these games. So, like, whether it be the, you know, the motion cap, how they move, the music, everything, all come from basically Tony Hawk. And, like, he's, like I said, quoted earlier, like, his proudest thing of this entire franchise is how it represented skating culture as a whole. Obviously, we've mentioned it multiple times. Tony Hawk lands his first 900, you know, just months before the game ends out. Activision actually offered Tony Hawk a one-time $500,000 buyout cost for helping with the game. And they were just going to pay him a one-time flat fee. And Tony Hawk was, like, blown out of his mind. This is the most money he's ever seen. He said, no, I need some royalties. And
is that George Lucas school?
One of the only smart creators that we have on any of the episodes that, that we've covered.
And obviously, he's now worth $140 million.
Good Lord.
As he said, I've done a lot of skating and done a lot, but Tony Hawk Pro Skater bought my house. Tony Hawk Pro Skater released in Europe and Australia under the name Tony Hawk Pro Skateboarding due to the word skater. They were worried about the word skater misleading them to believe the game was about ice skating.
Okay, but where is Christy Yamaguchi's Pro Skater? I'll play it.
I kind of want that. The character creation in that would be amazing.
You get to like come up with routines and it scores you. Yeah, why is this not a game?
And make Yuri on Ice a downloadable content?
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
I put this one in for Kate. Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, the Korean version, had their unlockable characters for the all-female K-pop band of Finn K.
Yes!
Okay, so how long until K-pop stands campaign for like BTS and Blackpink?
Put BTS in the game. Let's do it, Tony.
For all I know, they're going to be in the Korean version again, for all we know.
No, I want them in our version.
I want them in our... Yes, I want to. I will pay $5 to play them.
We got Spider-Man. They got Finn KO.
I feel like you would pay way more than $5 to play.
I would, actually. I will pay $5 per person, and you have to let me change their hair colors, and I would be good, because they have so many different hair colors. Namjoon's no longer blue-haired, and it makes me sad.
The last fun fact would be goats. Apparently, starting in Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4, the appearance of goats happened.
Yes.
And then they just basically continued to make it have appearance of goats all the way through Proving Grounds.
Yes.
That's goats. A choice.
That is a choice. But that is all I have. I guess final thoughts here before we get out of here.
Hold on. I have one.
I know I'm not allowed to go first.
Yes.
I'll go first. I think Tony Hawk Pro Skater is like a big thing in my life, mainly because it gave me a big connection with my uncle outside of just us playing MMOs together. Like, it gave us a common thing to talk about, and even if I wasn't like a big skateboarder and I didn't really get into like the fashion just because I didn't feel like it really fit me, it was a big part of that that got me into like other games like this, like Jet Set Radio and Sunset Overdrive, like Kate talked about. I enjoy playing those games because of what Tony Hawk Pro Skater does, and like it feels like I understand that the what is it, like the arcade game was first, but like this is just better, just in the kind of like every which way. It's diverse, the music is great, and I feel like Matt just made me pay $60. Like, I feel like he took $60 out of me during throughout this episode, because now I want to go buy the game when I was gonna put it off and wait until like a, you know, holiday sale, because I'm so excited to go play the game and listen to the soundtrack and kind of relive those memories like vicariously through the game.
Yeah,
awesome.
For me, I think, like I said, like, I always felt represented in Tony Hawk, and I think I've listed some reasons why, but, like, it's still one of those weird things that it just clicked with me. And I really want to take time for my final thought to just, like, you know, getting to start playing, you know, the remaster, and, like, knowing how much care Tony Hawk put in, not only to, like, he could have easily said, we're making this skater for skater from 1 and 2, and that's it, but because he cares so much about it representing the culture, he did what he could to make this remaster literally include everybody and be a more inclusive and diverse game. And one, good guy Tony Hawk is good, but it's also the fact that, like, I think that, like, this for me, just watching that intro and, like, learning that, like, Tony Hawk literally Tony Hawk has the authority to rename a skate move. I just want everybody to know that. But, like, he literally renamed the mute grab into the Weddle grab because after, like, going into the origins, he asked the actual person who created it, and he said, I'm deaf, not mute. And he was like, oh, yeah, this name is awful, and I'm sorry, and changed it. And he changed it in the game, too. And it's one of those things where, like, I think that a lot of people, when it comes to updating games, or, like, can take note that, like, you can update it and keep the and remaster it in a way that makes things stay the same while also adding things to it that are more representative of the culture and the people, not only who are playing it, but of the culture that it's representing. And in here, it's skate culture. And I think that, like, there's, like, thinking back and looking at that list of songs and listening to everybody talk, I feel like there's always been, like, the diversity of the skate community has always been represented. And I even think down to, like, the clothes that were included that you could get, like, the types of streetwear brands and everything. Like, that was stuff that, like, I saw all folks wearing. And hip-hop streetwear is very different than, like, skating streetwear. And then seeing those two things come together. So, like, for me, I think that there's, like, it can't be overstated enough, like, how inclusive the game is. Because, I mean, we've talked about how amazing it is for, like, mechanics and everything else like that. But I think for me, like, that's just something that's my final thought. And just, like, Tony Hawk's just a good guy, guys. Like, I will protect him at all costs because he deserves to be protected.
Is this where we talk about the race war?
We didn't talk about the race war. How did we forget?
The Tony Hawk race war meme is one of my favorite things.
That is one of the best memes in existence.
Obviously, Alex would go last, but for me, it was funny because we talk about all this stuff. I played this in probably one of my most favorite franchises. I don't talk about it a lot. You probably never heard it through. Probably, I mean, people that know me maybe know I played it and done whatever. But I guess I don't talk about it because we had, like, obviously 15 years probably since we've had a good game, per se. But then when I was doing these notes of just, like, and everything written out and doing everything, and just look back of, like, if there is probably, like, one franchise that probably influenced me the most in a lot of stuff I did, and, like, basically whether it be music or even, like, how I dress and everything, or even probably even the extent of, you know, fuck the police or something, you know, it's probably been, I've already said it, like, multiple times, so I can do it anyways. It's probably been Tony Hawk. And, like, it's weird because I never skateboarded and I never did any of that stuff. But as far as, like, playing these games and playing everything, like, it is, it's just been a lot of part of my life. And it's funny, just like it, and I mentioned before, like, I didn't, Neversoft, I've always enjoyed my first character, you know, my first character, my gamer tag after the company. And just between them and Guitar Hero, of, like, it may be, you know, it, in my past, but, like, how much I played or known or taken from just these games alone, and then, like I said, researching and seeing how many other people, whether it's just small introduction to bands, you know, just wearing types of clothes, brands of clothes, and how much that impact of just, like, or even, like I said, an entire sport. I don't think I go to X Games ever without playing Tony Hawk. I definitely don't. I might wear cargo shorts, but I definitely don't, like, basically wear what I wear now, or definitely some of the music, because, like, I still listen to Dead Kennedys pretty regularly. Same with Rage Against the Machine and a lot of the other hip bands that we have. I never got the shoe thing, I'm sorry. I always have to have a nice, comfortable run shoe. But just the amount of, like, how much I've enjoyed this game, and then seeing it come back, and then just, like, how they've actually put time and thought, as Kate had mentioned into her thing, of, like, in caring about the game and the franchise again, in the actual like skating culture stuff, it's been great. And obviously I've already played some of the game already. I've had a great time playing it so far. I mean, is it anything relatively new? Probably not, but the music's still great. The mechanics are still fun and it looks amazing. And so, yeah,
I like it.
I will say before Alex goes, I will include an image of the pink and black audios that I had because they were dope and they made my feet look cool. And that was also, so that was actually the first piece of clothing that made me admit that pink wasn't a girly color. And that's where I started liking pink, because I was against pink until Tony Hawk. Tony Hawk made me embrace my feminine side.
All right, what you got for us, Alex? Take us away.
All right, I'll do my best. Because, yeah, I going into this episode, I wasn't sure what I would have to say as, like, a final thoughts or why Tony Hawk matters. And even as we got closer to the end, I was like, I'm still not entirely sure what it is. But I think Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and Tony Hawk matters because people matter. And when I look at these games and Tony Hawk as a person and his career, it's people. It is a celebratory culture. It is a diverse culture. It is something that opens the world up to people, introduces them to new music, new ideologies by way of that. It took a whole generation of people who spent their time skating and who were told, you know, this is worthless, this goes nowhere, and it validated everything they'd been doing. It gave people a new hobby, a new thing to do. It built community by way of that. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater and Tony Hawk is a movement for the people more than anything, I think. Like, yes, it is just a video game, but the impact that it had on people, gamers, skaters, just everybody, just it's undeniable that this was like a force for good in the world, as weird as that sounds. Like, this is, yeah, it's just something really beautiful and special, and I am grateful that it was something that was a part of my childhood and that is now going to be a part of my adulthood. But yeah, Tony Hawk matters because people matter.
Awesome. You know, I thought that all three of us had like really good final thoughts that like finally,
I know,
like, collectively we would have like a better final thought than Alex, and it's just never gonna happen.
No, you guys heavily inspired that. I didn't even think to touch on like the representation part of it, because that was a huge thing in me forming that thought as you guys talked about it.
Until we started talking,
to be honest, I didn't think it was a thing until I looked on the internet, and obviously the internet tells you a lot of weird things.
Well, no, but it's not, because like, but like, the important thing to me that I don't understand is that that roster that you could play as is extremely white, and yet there was never a moment where I was like, oh yeah, this is a white thing. I was just always like, nah, this is a me thing. I fit here, which is something
is
that
the
like
pixels? Does...
the polygons. But like, there are other games where I felt that. And so I don't like, there's like a disconnect between like the whiteness of the roster and like the fact that I found a home in it, which just doesn't like, it doesn't compute in my brain. And I don't know what that is.
I think having to make your own character, because like once I made my
that's
own character,
probably
I didn't
what
play
it
anybody
is.
Else.
Yeah, that's probably.
I'm not gonna play
well, I think
that.
One thing though that's worth noting is like the characters who weren't just white dudes in the game, like, I, at least for me, like, I never felt like they were, like, tokenized. It was like, oh, this is just another skater. Like, it was just presented as, like, here's another person from our community. And I was like, all right, cool.
So that is actually something that I will say is really cool, is the fact that, like, because in create a character, or, like, even in customization, like, in picking up clothing throughout a game, a lot of female characters are just resigned to, like, really feminine things. And then, like, so, like, I know I said that they're, like, you kind of had either or in the creation pieces. But, like, the fact that I could put on guy clothes is actually a really big thing. And I know a lot of that comes from Alyssa Steamer being included in that and being a voice in that. So, like, yes, you had two spectrums that you could choose from. But the fact that I could make a female character that did dress in masculine clothes and not something that was, like, those are boy pants, but here's your hips. But, like, actual, like, masculine clothes is also something that was really cool.
Yeah, I guess for me, like I said, besides being able to choose your set of clothes you like, I mean, it represented clothes. I mean, a variety of clothes. I mean, the music, and we talk about just how important the music is. The music's pretty damn diverse. And so when you look at the diverse music of what you're playing, and then, like, even, like I said, even to the extent of the themes of the music, I mean, people choose the music they want, and they know what they're putting in there. So at no point time, you know what you're getting into, and probably it may not be everybody in there, but it's probably like, you know, the people that are probably in there and what they're like. But anyways, we are way past time. I know, Adrian.
I didn't know we'd have this much to say about
Tony. I didn't either, but I'm really happy we did.
I knew it was going to be long. I didn't know it was going to be this long.
No, this is like a good warm, fuzzy episode for me.
Yeah, I'm going to tag Tony Hawk in this when I post it, and I hope he looks at it.
Like, me too. I want him to hear all the nice things we have to say about him.
I'm not going
to
tag Bam Margera. I don't want that man within...
He's not well lately. I don't know if you've seen anything. I haven't.
He's also just an awful human.
Yeah, no, he was having like a mental breakdown on Instagram or something.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
It's been a while. Okay, let's get us out of here. We've been a long time.
Yeah, but yeah, so thank you, Alex, for coming on and having this. You know what? It's a wholesome episode. Those are the two things we have Alex on for, wholesome and spooky. So this was wholesome.
Either someone's getting uplifted or murdered, and that's why I'm here.
Or uplifted as they're being murdered.
When a wholesome slasher comes out, I will be on.
So, Alex, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at mostalwaysalex. I'm on Frightday.com doing genre and horror news and reviews, and I have a video game podcast that will, I think, be talking about Tony Hawk very soon called Game Boys. I'm pretty sure that's our episode next week. And then also, yeah, I'll be on Xbox One at Vanny Vedito, and I will be playing Tony Hawk as much as possible for, like, the next month.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as always, if you want to support the podcast a little bit more, head on over to patreon.com/butwhythoughpc and follow us on all of our social media at butwhythoughpc. And you can find me at OhMyMythRandier and on Twitter. And because Matt signs off with his funny thing, Matt will be reviewing the game for butwhythoughpodcast.com. So you can see his review, which I'm sure will be very loving, which because, you know, he loves things very hard there when that goes up. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperRuiz93, SuperRuiz93.
Matt?
Skate just for edgelords, and I still don't understand it.
Oh, no. Let's get out of here. Let's get out of here.